Well, today is September the 1st, 1962, at Fairbanks, Alaska, and this is Harry Hughes recording a memorandum of a trip yesterday to a mine. And in the room with me here is Tory Anderson, the owner of this little one-man mine operation, and I'd like to ask him a few questions about our trip yesterday and the pictures we took. Tory, first, when did you come into Alaska?
Well, it's my first trip in here was quite a number of years ago. However, right at the moment, I'm not been in the Fairbanks area or in Alaska continuous for only about 22, 23 years.
What has been your life's business story?
Well, I've been mining ever since I've been in the country, Harry.
Were you mining in some other area before you come to Alaska?
No, I've done some prospecting in Wyoming, but no actual mining.
Well, what year did you come into the Fairbanks area?
38, 39, somewhere.
I should remember when you come in. I think I met you when you first come into the Fairbanks area. I was working nights in the Nordale that time, you remember?
Very possibly did.
Mm-hmm.
However, when I hit Fairbanks, I didn't have money enough to stay in the Nordale anyway.
Well, it didn't take much money in those years, but we didn't have any.
That's right.
Well, Tory, a number of people have asked me over the last 3 or 4 years why I don't get a hold of you and get a little story about your mining for the pioneers. So the other day we made arrangements with you to take a news writer out, and Jimmy McDonald and myself and yourself were out at the mine yesterday, and we took a number of pictures, and you made a very fine demonstration of your mine and described it. Will you now tell me, Tory, how you acquired this land and what caused you to start to operate on it?
Well, yes, Harry. Start of this thing, in fact, we'll go way back, prying into the history of it. That ground lies on a divide between Flume Creek and Fox Gulch. That particular ground was originally staked by some of the first hard rock miners that came into Fairbanks area, which was in 1910. Now, all that paperwork is on record here in the recording office. That was staked by a man with the name of Gus Sharp. Maybe you knew him.
No, I didn't know the gentleman.
Gus passed away, as I recall, in 1940.
I don't remember.
Well, he staked that ground in 1910, and he had a partner by the name of Freeman. Both of these fellows are mentioned in various early-day USGS bulletins. And they very religiously worked on that property from 1910 until 1927, or a period of 17 years, that they done a lot of handwork on that. However, in those days, they were looking for high-grade gold ore, which all of the prospectors were at that time, looking for the source of this Fairbanks placer. Now, what they actually had was silver-lead deposit with a small amount of gold, and they kept digging, trying to find high-grade gold ore. Now, in those days, their silver and their lead was actually worth nothing. Silver, about 30 cents, and lead, maybe 4 cents. So therefore, they couldn't do anything with it. Now, that ground was never patented. It laid there and was forgotten about. And a fellow from the old Territorial Department of Mines, and I was mining on Pedro, placer mining at the time, at the mouth of Flume Creek, and used to pick up all sizes of your fist of galena.
It came down. Known as float.
Float. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this fellow was out one time, and I mentioned the fact to him, and he said, yeah, he said, you know, there is quite a good prospect on top of the hill up here. And he's the one that first informed me about it. So I started looking for the thing. And I put in, for a small area, I put in a long time hunting that thing and finding it. It was all growing up the brush, of course. But finally I located it, and I took a cat up there, a bulldozer, and started a little digging. Well, that was the starting of the thing. Well, inasmuch as I was placer mining all over the country, I wasn't too interested in hard rock at the time. And fooled with it for several years, and just sniping around on the thing, looking. And finally I got Fred Walkwitz to go up with me and take a look at it. He was an old-time, well-known hard rock prospector. And I thought I'd get Fred's version on the thing. So we went up one day, and he looked it over, and he said, yes, he said, by all means, you should do some work on it. So at that time, I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do, Fred. I said, I'm going to move up in Porcupine Creek in the Circle District. And when I'll be back, I don't know. I might be up there 4 or 5 years, maybe 10, maybe longer, placer mining. Maybe only a year, I don't know. But in the meantime, I said, if you will keep up the assessment work on this ground, I'll cut you and give you half interest in it. He said, that's a good deal. Well, that's the way the thing started, and we've been partners ever since, and Fred has done a lot of work. He done practically all that work, which you seen yesterday, where we have the three veins exposed. He done practically all of that by hand, with pick and shovel and a wheelbarrow, hand drilling with a single jack and a piece of steel. However, I did take a dozer up and do the stripping for him, and we started from there. And we are in a position now where we needed a mill. Therefore, I installed a small mill.
Well, now give us the source of that mill and how you come to acquire it.
Well, that's quite a story too, Harry. That ball mill itself is the one unit which you seen yesterday. It's a hard-inch conical mill. And that was brought in here, now I don't know what year, but at one time it sat on Cushman Street. Now maybe you recall this. I don't. And that was brought in here by the USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, for testing ores in the Fairbanks District. And the thing was set up, and as I understand, it was never used, maybe a time or two. And they gave up on the project for some unknown reason, I don't know why. And they in turn gave that to the University of Alaska. The University of Alaska installed that mill for educational purpose for the School of Mines. And however, it was too large a mill for what they wanted. But inasmuch as they got it for free, naturally they accepted it. But it was too much for what they wanted to do for school purposes. It's actually a commercial type mill. It's not a laboratory mill in any sense of the word. So therefore, they didn't do too much with it. It was never run out there. However, the equipment was there for school purposes. They explain what a ball mill looked like and then do their engineering from that and their speeds and so on. And so actually it was very beneficial to them. But now they have started to install a new small mill out there of more modern equipment and strictly laboratory or testing laboratories, what it amounts to, which we very much need in the country. And therefore, they disposed this other mill. Well, I bought it. What parts I could use there, then I picked up pieces all over the country and cobbled them together, so to speak, and come out with what I have that you fellas seen yesterday, which is nothing more than a gravity concentration plant. Due to the fact of high freight rates, you cannot ship raw ore out of the country. That's been tried. We ship 50 ton to prove the point. In fact, I think I showed you the assay report on that for the smelter return. And it takes it all for freight. So the only answer to that is put in a concentrating plant and eliminate your rock and your residue and ship your mineral. And that's exactly what we're doing now.
The cost of shipping that original ore and the value of the ore, what was the value of it?
Well, we ship 50 tons of raw ore. We took this ore from wall to wall, and we prorated out of the three veins that we have open, which you've seen up there yesterday. These veins average about 5 foot in width each. and we prorated out of these three veins accumulation of 50 ton and put it in old steel drums and shipped that to the American Smelting and Refining Company at Selby, California for processing. Now, this was done more to get a volume assay on the deposit rather than the intentions of trying to make any money on it and prove what could be done with ore, if anything, out of the country, which we found very quick you couldn't do anything as far as shipping ore because your freight rate
eat up all the profit.
They took it all, yes. Now that's one thing that there should be something done about in the country. Of course, people have been harping on that for years, but nothing's ever accomplished. They keep hollering what we need in Alaska is a backhaul. And that will cheapen our freight rate coming north, which fundamentally it would. It sound basically sounds good. But you come up with a backhaul, they charge you just as much to haul it south as they do hauling freight north. Therefore, you're out of the picture as far as doing anything on freight. The answer to all that, which will come in the future, maybe not in our time, but someday you will see large modern milling equipment in here and develop these hard rock deposits, and later you will see a smelter in the country.
Now, can we start in, and you describe the mill from the hopper right down through the mill, that's similar to what you did yesterday for the tape.
Yes. Well, as you've seen, Harry, we have to haul our ore from the mine about 1 mile, which we built the road down. Now, the reason for that is we had to have water for the mill. So we set the mill down where we had water. We haul this 1 mile, and we have it built on two levels. The upper road, as you noticed yesterday, we bring the ore in and back it in on this ramp and dump it on this grizzly, which is your spaced railroad iron inverted. Now, anything that falls through the grizzly will fit the crusher we're using. The big ones, of course, you have to sledgehammer and bring them down to size. So it goes from there into this fine ore bin. From the fine ore bin, we have a screen just before it gets to the crusher and screens out the fines, which increases the volume of the crusher by running just rock, and you bypass all the fines right into the fine ore bin. Then we run from the fine ore bin into a scoop feeder on the ball mill down the chute, which is something a little unique. We're using water for feeding this ore. Normally you use a mechanical feeder or belt feeder or pan feeder or something, but we've done a little experimenting and I put in this water feed system, which works real good. It goes into the ball mill and grinds and discharges from the ball mill into a door rake classifier, which classifies your material as to size for your table. Now the coarse product goes back up through the classifier and returns into ball mill for regrind, which makes what you term as closed circuit grinding. And the fine material with the water comes out of the classifier and onto our concentrating table, where of course more water is added, and the action of this table is your gravity concentration. And our tailings go from there into our tailing pond, and the concentrates into our concentrate receiver, which we pick up and in turn dry on that table. Then we barrel them and they're ready for shipment to the smelter. Now from now on we will ship concentrates. That's one place our Alaska Highway has helped. However, it's never been used for that, but it will in the future. These trucks coming up, it will give them something for a backhaul, and we can do a lot better business with these truckers going back, in as much as they're going back empty, to give them a little weight for their trucks and pays their expenses getting back down the road. So we will ship down to East Helena, Montana, which is our closest smelter to Fairbanks today. We have a smelter in Tacoma, Washington, which is the same company, American Smelting. But incidentally, they don't have a lead, what they call a lead stack there. They can't handle lead ore, gold, silver, and copper. So we have to go to Helena, Montana, or Selby, California, San Francisco Bay. So naturally, inasmuch as we can backhaul on the highway, the East Helena plant will be the ideal one for us to use.
Now, you, this operation of yours is strictly a one- or two-man operation at the present time.
Well, actually, Harry, what you've seen there yesterday, I accomplished all by myself, strictly. I built the mill alone, and I've been operating it this summer alone. As I say, now it's been more or less experimental this year. Now we get the thing a little farther along, and next year I have hopes of running it probably two shifts.
Now, can we describe the mill a little further in this extent? You have a generating plant, the size of it, it's a diesel-operated plant, and your source of water, and how you get it up to the mill?
Yes, Harry, we have a little international diesel engine and a 20 kW DC generator, which I had to pick up out of a junkyard here and rebuild. In as much as the motors, electric motors for each unit, which I bought from the university, were all DC motors. So rather than to convert to AC, why I picked up this DC generator and rebuilt this generator and cleaned up the motors and wound up with a little DC plant. Which, of course, you being an electrician man, you understand this electrical business probably more so than I do. In fact, I know you do. But from what I've read and learned the hard way and been told by capable people such as yourself, the DC power is the ideal power for a compact unit anyway. That's why they use it on these railroads for in their diesel trains, diesel electric. It has a lugging power, so to speak, as I understand it. And which I readily see, like starting my ball mill, I come up with that old controller and she'll bite right in and you bring her right up. And they tell me you can't do that successfully with AC power.
Not on the same principle.
Yes. So that's what we wound up with, is a little DC plant, and which actually is very cheap power for us. Nothing of what Rampart power would be if we ever get in here and get big plants running. But for a temporary small plant, prove what we can do with ore deposits in the area. It's cheap power. We run on about a gallon and a half of diesel oil per hour at a cost of about 28 cents a gallon.
Now, what volume of water are you able to pump, and what type of pump is that?
Well, I use a little centrifugal pump. I'm pumping right out of the creek. However, for our operation, it doesn't take a large volume of water. We're running about, probably 20, 25 gallons a minute. Takes care, and that is ample water supply.
For that size operation,
yes. However, if you go into larger milling equipment, then you'll use more. You might wind up using that much just across the table.
Now, in a sidelight to this, to improve this plant or increase its efficiency, there's other minerals besides the lead and silver that you're taking out. How do you propose to save those?
Well, all we're doing here, we have a small content of gold in it, but all we are doing is concentrating the gold, silver, and lead as a unit. And we don't worry about trying to separate that here. It has to be shipped to the smelter anyway, so we don't worry about taking a little bit of gold out. All you're doing is degrading your concentrate. So you do as well ship it all to the smelter, and they get practically 100% recovery where we wouldn't anyway. Therefore, why we just concentrate the whole thing and ship it as such.
Now, that concentrate that comes off of your little mill there is about what percent of metal against residue? or rock?
Well, our lead content coming off of there is about 36% lead in our concentrate. Of what we've actually done, we could cut that way down where you'd have a real clean product. But there's a point where you have to balance between the tonnage you're running through, what it's costing you to run it, how long you run your power plant, and so on, to produce a marketable product. And that's exactly all we're trying to do, is get a product which will pay its expenses, show a little profit, and get it to the smelter and get it processed. Now, to do that, you can't cut your concentrates too clean, or you're forever even getting a ton of it. So we get it to the point where you have a marketable product, and that's all you can ask for.
Now, I noticed when you demonstrated yesterday, on that table, is there a possibility of extending that process to retrieve additional mineral through improvement of the plant?
Yes, definitely there is, Harry. As I say, this thing was put up experimental in mind, and which we've done a lot of experimenting on this summer. And we do see room for little modifications here and there on anything new that you would build. We want to put in a sand pump and return the middlings off the table for regrind, which will increase our recovery quite noticeably. Then I want to put in a heat exchanger on our engine there, and I'll manufacture that myself and have something for drying our concentrates, whether and depend on the sunshine, which we haven't had much of this summer, as you know. And there's many little improvements like that, which I will do for next year.
Now, what other minerals in this Alaska, interior Alaska, could be mined in the same manner that you're operating this little mill?
Well, to answer that straight out, Harry, I'd say practically every known mineral's in the Fairbanks area, which is covers quite a scope.
The reason I ask this, to our knowledge, there's only one of this type of mill, which is your operation here at the present time.
That is correct.
There has been other in the early days, but they've never been developed.
That's right. Now, they were all old stamp mills, which today, stamp mill is reached a point where it is obsolete on your modern milling techniques. They have all been replaced with ball mills and rod mills and tube mills and what have you, and jigs and flotation units and so on. Eventually, now what we're up to here, eventually we'll get, in fact we are working on the present time, to get a larger custom milling plant set in here, strictly for the development of the minerals in this area. As you know, Harry, I am actually a dedicated miner. That's all I see, it's all I want to see, it's all I know, and it's all I want to do. And the sooner the people in this area realize the mineral potential that's right here under our noses as a basic industry for this country, the better off we'll all be. They're awful hard to see that. We have a new generation of people. The older timers can see it. They know us here. But there's very few people doing anything about it. That's why I'm so eager to get something done before I'm too old to, where I got to bypass it too. I like to see something get started. At least I can prove a point, which I have already done. And the people are very interested in it. Our State Department of Mines, all up and down the line, the university, they're all very interested in this now, and they're keeping a very close watch on it.
Now, getting back to the, what do you believe would be the most important immediate aid to your development of this type of mining?
Well, as far as the aid is concerned, the most helpful thing we could have would be cheap freight rates out of the country, of course.
Or is there another, would a smelter in this area encouraged the development of this type of mining to a great extent.
Definitely. Definitely would. But you have to remember this. It's right back to the old adage, Harry, of which came first, the hen or the egg.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody coming in here and build a smelter till they see the ore developed. And under your present economic conditions, you cannot go out and develop the ore without a place to dispose of it. Now we're getting back to what I said a few moments ago. That's why we want to try to get a larger custom concentrating plant in here, where people can go out and work on these little prospects and have a place to dispose of their ore and get their money so they can go back and
keep on working.
Now, suppose you had 100 of them out here digging, which is, it's not out of the question. There's that many prospects.
There's lots of mineral deposits here and lots of sources.
That's right. If they'd go out and start digging on these, of course they all won't make a mine. We know that. But if you only got one actually big producer out of 100 of them digging, we'd really be getting someplace.
So the door is wide open for modern day prospecting.
That's right.
Now between this Fairbanks and the Yukon area, and the Dawson area, and parts of Canada, there is room for a smelter in this area.
There will be when the minerals are developed, that's the thing.
Now, what bearing do you feel that Rampart or the hydroelectric project would have in encouraging this development?
Well, no doubt it will have a large bearing on that. It comes down to power requirements. Now there's large deposits in the country which hasn't been too much done with. We have a few just in the last year or two, as you know, up in the Kobuk and so on, which are enormous projects. And that is where your Rampart Power is going to really fit in the picture. They need it, and it will it'll do enormous things to the country. Now going back to a little operation like I have, that's just a little pinpoint. As far as Rampart Power, they wouldn't even know we was hooked on their line, or even much smaller. But it's the idea of starting those little things, which will grow into many, many small operations. And you get enough small operations going, it's just as good as one big one.
Now, Earl Pilgrim of the antimony mine at Stampede, Alaska, is a friend of yours. And is his operation somewhere along the line of yours?
Very similar, Harry, yes. Very similar.
But he's only working on one specific metal.
He's working on antimony ore, yes. Mm-hmm. But at the present time he is milling, and in fact he just got his mill into operation, I understand, in the past week. He's completely rejuvenated his old plant he had, put in all concrete footings and floor, and some new equipment added, and he has a crew down there now, and he's getting this antimony concentrates out for shipment to Japan, which he informed me he will have his contract fulfilled by October, and that'll put that one on its way.
We learned another thing recently in Mr. Earl Pilgrim's mine. It was cheaper for him to use a flying boxcar and fly his mining equipment over to his ground rather than to freight it across country.
That is right. That's another advantage of our modern day transportation, Harry. It's something that the old timer didn't have. He had to do it the hard way. Of course, he was worse off. He had to do everything by foot or with a boat or pack horses or dogs or something, and then came the tractors and so on, which were very modern, and we still use them. But now you're into the point of air transportation, and that has made a big difference. It's a matter, of course, you have to have your airstrips built, which Mr. Pilgrim built his own airstrip of, I understand, 4,000 feet or longer.
It's a little over 4,000 now.
And they can land good size airplanes in there, mm-hmm. And the man is to be commended for that, taking the initiative to do something to develop the country. That air transportation has no doubt helped him tremendously, and it will help others.
Now, is there any other operations in this country or mining similar to what you and Mr. Pilgrim are doing.
As far as I know, we are the only ones in this area. Well, I'm the only one right in the Fairbanks area at the moment. Pilgrim's down in the McKinley Park area, or Stampede. And I understand there's quite a little activity up in the Chandelier on the Mikado Lode and the Little Squaw. What's his name? Ed Toussaint from Fort Yukon. He's all ready to go with a small mill he's installed. He's just waiting for economic conditions. You probably know Ed. He runs a little power plant there at Fort Yukon.
Yes, I know.
Utilities. And he is seen into future, and he has his little mining outfit ready to go.
You're not too far from where the old Gustafsson hard rock mine was located over in that area, are you?
Well, you're probably speaking of the old Hi-U mine, I think, Harry.
Yes, it's over...
Yeah, that's over the hill from us. That's we're on the west side of Pedro Dome, and they're over on the east side of it.
Mm-hmm. I was down there several years ago when it was operating.
But those mines are all closed down. Now they're old stamp mills. The last one, I believe, that ran here in the country was the Clary Hill. Now that's quite an enormous plant to look at the thing on the outside. An old battery of stamps in there, and a concentrating table and amalgam plates. Now to look at that, and they used to work quite a bunch of men in there, and that mine was a good producer.
Their average crew, if I remember right, was 7 to 9 men.
Well, the late Frank Cruz, that just passed away here in the last month, the bookkeeper for them, and he told me their crew used to run about 20 men.
They're as high as 20.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, just for reference, the little mill that you saw yesterday that I've installed, this little ball mill, has about the same capacity as that big monstrosity they had over there.
That's the point I wanted to make, Joe.
Yes. So let's show you what just a little improvement in equipment can do. However, mine is not modern equipment by a long shot, but it is in that direction. With a few modifications, if I wanted to add flotation units and so on and get it right down where I'd get 96% or 98% recovery, well, I could use that too. But that will come later with the more modern equipment, and you get the thing we're after is a custom concentrating plant in here for the development of the small mines. The thing is, we're setting, which has been known, one of the greatest placer fields in the country. Same as they had at Dawson in here. But to get in the hills and do the hard rock prospecting for the sources of this placer has been very, very little done, as you know.
There hasn't been hardly anything done.
The country really hasn't been scratched.
Mining reports show that the hard rock prospecting has only been scratched here.
That's right. The deepest hole in the whole Fairbanks area was the old Clary Hill mine, and that was only 300 feet. And that thing produced, as I understand, a little over $3 million.
Do you remember this Gus Karpus and his partner that worked out here just beyond Esther? It's about 16 miles from town also, out towards beyond where the FE company's working.
No, I've heard of them, Harry.
There's a mill over there. I haven't been able to make the trip over to take some pictures yet of the old equipment.
There's remains of a few old mills around the country and some old stamps, but they haven't been operated since the war or before. During that war closure order, the old L-208 closure order from Washington, that stopped a lot of mines. They filled up with water and the timbering deteriorated and so on. And then your economic condition, of course, changed and the cost of everything went up, and it put some of them in a position where they just could not reopen. If and when they ever do something about the price of gold, I don't think there's any question, but what you see larger companies come in and have the operating capital and reopen some of these older mines, which are still good. There's mineral in them. The old Clary Hill and a lot of these mines are no doubt lots of ore under there yet. But for a small group of people or a small company which you don't have the financial capital to go in there and develop those things, why, of course, they're going to lie dormant.
Well, I hope yesterday's visit to your mine will throw a lot of information and background on the economic things that are available here for people today with a little ambition and ingenuity to develop. With the largest state in the United States laying here, almost in its virgin state, there's room for lots of development.
That is correct, Terry. There's no doubt about it. There's lots of mineral in this area, and they should be developed, and they will be in time. But, of course, as one individual, I'm not going to do it all, but at least I'm stepping in that direction. And I believe I've proved a point to quite a number of people just with what I've done in the past year by installing this little mill, what you can do with the ores that are available in this country.
Now, another point I'd like to make for the tape here is the average age of the people that are doing these things. They're not young people. Young people are not taking part in this like they should.
No, they're not, Harry. They're not. It's of a new generation. And, well, I don't know how to put it. But they don't seem to be interested in going to hills and developing anything basic for the country. They can want to work on a government project or work for the Army or work for this or work for that. But to actually get out in the hills, in which, in a way, I guess you can't blame them. It's hard work. It takes a certain few with that certain something in their system that requires that they go out and do that. And I guess
it takes an adventurer.
That's right.
Is actually a pioneer to go out and develop anything.
That's
now,
right.
Now, Earl Pilgrim is past 70, and how old are you, Joey?
Well, I'm crowding 60 awful close.
You're getting close to 60.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, but the average miner that I've met out in the hills, with the exception of very few incidents, are people that are past 50 and 60 years old.
That is right.
There happens to be one Eskimo family out here that's located near you. He's a man about 40, 45 years old, has his whole family out there, and he's placer mining for gold.
That's right.
And he's got a lot of worn-out equipment he's acquired.
Well, speaking of modern transportation, you can probably hear that jet going over now.
Mm-hmm. The time right now is 25 minutes to 12 on my watch. And this is September the 1st, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska. And Tori, I want to thank you for this interview on tape. The tape itself will probably wind up in the Pioneer Records, but I would like to ask you if we could have your permission on the tape to play it or use it where it would do the greatest benefit for the people here, for instance at the university or some of our representatives wish to hear it, but not convert it to commercial use, except with your written consent.
You feel perfectly free, Harry. Go ahead and use for anything according to the use of the pioneers or anything as you stated.
Mm-hmm.
Just free, feel free absolutely to go ahead and use it. And I hope it will do some good. And I also want to thank you for your interest in what we are doing up there and knocking yourself out to the point of coming up when we didn't have too good a weather and seeing what was being done.
I'll be 64 my next birthday, and I brought Judy, the reporter from the News Miner, and you will have a little write-up probably next week if it's prepared in time regarding this trip. And Jimmy McDonald, another member of the Pioneers of Alaska, Igloo 4, at Fairbanks. And I'll terminate this little tape for now and let you hear it back.
Thank you, Harry.